Sabres Live is presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Your Sabres are headed to the Stanley Cup.
This is a giant step for us, for all the players, to really get a feel of what it's really like. You know, I took the job. I thought number one was I want these guys to like being a Buffalo Sabre, to be proud of playing here.
This is the part where we lean in.
Come on, Blue, here we go!
Shot, scores!
Our fans have been so great.
You could feel the building shaking. The atmosphere was unbelievable.
Let's go get the next one!
He really made sure he pushed us every day, and I think that brought a lot of success for sure.
One hell of a game!
Very proud of our guys. They did our city proud.
No-brainer, according to the general manager. Lindy Ruff is back for two more years, and the general manager himself, Jarmo Kekäläinen, has a lot on his plate, but he seems very, very excited for the offseason ahead. The coach, of course, would rather not be here today. Yeah. He said yesterday, and rightfully so, because everyone feels it, they would desperately want to be in Carolina for game one of the Eastern Conference Final tonight. But as it stands, Marty, we are in that still locker clean-out mode, and quickly anticipating the summer to come.
Yeah, quick note, if you can't stomach to watch hockey tonight, the Knicks and the Cavaliers, I know producer Sam may be watching as Cleveland teams go in, and they had a good game one. So that's just on the NBA side. If you can't stomach to watch Carolina and Montreal.
They lost game one.
Yeah, I know the Knicks came back, but they're going to try to bounce. They were up by 22.
I don't think the producer would take any consolation in losing a game.
No, he's going to watch the game tonight. They're up by 22, going almost.
He's also not a Cleveland Cavaliers fan. So.
Oh, that's okay. Well, he's a Cleveland everything fan, but that's okay. Number two, I'll be watching because I love hockey, and I'll be wanting to see what, you know, what maybe does Carolina do that the Sabres weren't able to do. How does Montreal counter that? And what does that look like for the Sabres next year? And I remember when, you know, I took the job over at the Harbor Center with the Academy of Hockey. The one year in the playoffs, we did like a bunch of, in preparation for what we were going to teach and how we were going to prepare and the junior Sabres and maybe our eventual growth. We're watching all the playoffs and when writing reports. What does, I remember when Colorado Tyson Berry got kneed by Matt Cook, Colorado, Minnesota. That was my series and I had to watch it. And how Colorado kind of went backwards after losing Berry and all that. But we had to do reports. I'm sure the Sabres, even though they're disappointed, they're going to watch that and try to see how did Carolina, how do they play against Montreal? What Montreal does against Carolina? How do we get that going forward? I'm sure they watched last night trying to see what does Vegas do to Colorado and whatnot. So I'll be watching. I know it's going to be hard, and I know Lindy Ruff said he'd rather be in Carolina, and he wanted to get another shot at the Hurricanes because not only did he lose in 06 here in Buffalo, but he also lost with the Devils in against Carolina in five games, and he wants another shot. Well, maybe it's next year because now he has the two-year extension. He can continue to work on what he did this year.
We're going to hear from some of the players and from the lighter side of things, certainly as we wind our way into a long weekend for us and most of you, I would assume, but certainly a very short work week for us. We'll be off Friday and Monday, so we'll get into the player sound coming up here. But one quick sentence on each of Lindy's and Jarmo's pressers yesterday.
Encouraging. I think that may be a one word, maybe a sentence in. Look, they see it as a lot of work to continue to be done. Lindy Ruff talks about his assistant coaches and mostly his assistant coach at home, his wife that, you know, has been pushing him the last couple of years and continued to support him. But the chemistry and what he's learned from everybody. We had Lindy Ruff here, and Duffer, you asked him one word on his assistants, and we went through all the assistants, and he had nothing but good things to say. And I know that there's parts of the game that they have to continue to work on. And, you know, the power play finally got going, you know, later in the Montreal series, but it had been a really, really tough April. It had been a tough year. When you look at the power play and Tage Thompson in the power play, there's a lot to work on. But that group communicates well, works well. The chemistry between Lindy and Jarmo is good. Lindy even talked about Kevin Adams and his relationship with him going back to when he was hired and the discussion they had about the young players. I think there's a lot of encouraging signs moving forward. Is there a lot of work to be done? Yes, but there was encouraging signs when I listened to Lindy and Jarmo both talking yesterday.
Well, there were definitely takeaways that, you know, as this we roll through spring and into summer, we'll probably take a lot of what was said yesterday and apply it on any given day of the week as far as what's in the news cycle and who's hitting free agency and who's signing, and any contract that gets done across the league always has an indirect impact on every other team. So there's never going to be a shortage of news between now and when the puck drops next fall, or, you know, in a few months.
It'll be a little earlier.
I was going to say, it's nice that it's a little earlier, but I also, before you even say it, I hate the 84-game season. It could be the dumbest thing the NHL's ever done.
That was my schedule.
I don't understand. And it was short-lived because there's no reason to tax athletes more than what they're already taxed. Like, I just don't get it, but that's for another day.
You know what? I'm going to ask you this in that same vein. And I know we got a lot of sound, but I was asked that question this morning, and I'm going to ask you the same. I know they go to 84 games, and it's too bad. Balance the schedule, division, other division, conference, and all of it, and it makes sense. But knowing, and one of the questions to Yarmo yesterday was the road teams having so much success in the playoffs. Knowing what you know now, and years don't continue to be the same, but with 2 weeks left of the season, if you're in a position where you can rest players, load management, and not really push for home ice advantage, but know that you're in a playoff spot. Do you do it knowing that home ice has really not meant anything this year in the playoffs?
Well, I wouldn't limit my research to just this year.
Well,
because if
is,
this
yes.
trend continues this year, it will be three times in the last 4 years that the road team has won more than the home in the Stanley Cup playoffs. And I've been harping on it longer than just that.
Yes.
So this is not a thing. And I'm actually a little surprised that people haven't said why the reason is what the reason is. The reason is because of parity. And if there's 3 points, 10 points, or 15 points between teams in a division, that's really not that much at the end of a day. So
in 1985, it was a team was like 110-65, and they played the first
round. Then it wasn't a guarantee.
Yes,
but I'm not surprised by any of this at all. I think you have to give credit to the fact that it's a balanced sporting event. It's a coin flip every night. To me, sports is that way now. Like, I don't see absolutes. Anyway, as far
but like
as
Florida, you know, last year, they didn't push at the end of the year. They're like, we're in the playoffs. We don't need to go for home ice advantage. They let Toronto and Tampa get ahead of them, and they're like, we're fine with that.
And every team's situation
is different.
Is different every year for sure. Now, one thing out of the locker cleanout, which was really nice, and it was actually quite touching in the moment, and Alex Lyon is a very thoughtful individual. But when Matthew Fairburn of The Athletic, you know, keep in mind, we didn't hear much from Alex after Game 6 because they had won the game with Luukkonen coming on in relief.
Yes.
And so, you know, the question was kind of presented to Alex, like, how did you get through that moment? And Alex almost stopped him and said, I appreciate the gentle nature with which you're asking this question.
You're massaging it.
But of course, there was more to it from Lyon, and the fact that he was so grateful that he wasn't standing there talking about a loss and what he might owe to Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen.
It was tough. You know, you try to prepare the same way for every game, and sometimes things like that just happen. It's the life of an NHL goalie. But for sure it would be, you know, a lot worse if our season ended that night. And so I owe a huge amount of gratitude to the guys, and credit to them for pulling through, and owe UPL a nice bottle of wine and a big hug. So it was tough, but I just got to use that the right way and let it motivate me. And again, that's part of it.
Best gift you've ever received from your goalie partner or partners?
Well, I did get a bottle of wine from Henrik Lundqvist, who used to have a shutout Hank lottery. So basically, if he had a shutout the very next road trip on the plane, he would stop by the liquor store, get four really nice bottles of wine, and then he'd basically pull numbers out of a hat and do a lottery, trainers included. Wouldn't give any to the coaches. They had their own wine up in the plane. But anyway, and I one time got it, and it was wasn't like if you played 25 minutes or 2 minutes or if you were the backup goalie. It was everybody because it takes a team to do it. And I think that was and then I started doing a liquor lottery. I'd go and get four bottles of, you know, I got Jack Daniels. And one time the guys went crazy. We knew where the party was going to be next time we got back. But look, for Alex Tuch, it was Alex Lyon. It was a tough game six. Giving up three goals on four shots. The team won, as he said. You know, it's a lot better. The team came back and won, and we gave ourselves a chance for game seven. And as goalie partners, you have to be always picking up one another. It happens. It's happened even more now where goalies come in, and they are able to win the game. That's how it started, the stretch in December 9th. When Colton Ellis was in net, he got run over. He was held out for, you know, concussion protocol, and Lyon went in and won the game against the Oilers, and that's the 10-game streak right there. You got to be ready. Luukkonen was ready. Lyon can appreciate it now, give him a big hug and a bottle of wine, but that's part of the game, and it happens more and more now.
One-word answer only. The Sabres will employ three goalies next year?
No.
Okay, you're going to be wrong on that, but
I know.
We'll talk about it more next week. Alex Tuch is a pending unrestricted free agent and obviously was a huge, huge presence in yesterday's media availabilities, both him personally and the questions toward his teammates and the coach and the general manager. Of course, it's always more than just hockey, as Alex discussed this season and its impact on his family.
It's been awesome. It's definitely leaked into my family life. My oldest son now is just obsessed with hockey, and we have to do. I got him a little mini rink, and he's got rollerblades up in our playroom, and he's. I have to introduce him as number 89 with the Buffalo Sabres, Trippy Tuch, and we put on the Dire Straits song there, and he goes and skates a couple laps and puts his stick up in the air. It's nothing like it, honestly. So it's a lot of fun, and he's got that "Let's Go Buffalo" chant down with the drum to a thunder science. So it's a lot of fun for me.
You'll have to teach Razor.
Drum bang and game one next year. Trippy Tuch, let's go. I mean, he can get it done. That would be awesome. You know what's better? That story is awesome, and there's a personal side to it and all of that. It's great when your own kid is actually wanting to be you. Mm-hmm. Because when I was like, when my son Jacob was that age, I was playing with the Rangers, and he was playing the goalie. He was like, Lundqvist with the save. I'm like, dude, I'm here. But, I mean, he went with a different player, which was great, so that's awesome.
Well, there's, you know, the family impact that all of this has on parents and kids alike. And then, a lot of players live in the same areas. So the neighbor skill set of Alex Tuch, according to Tage Thompson.
He's such a good teammate, but he might be an even better neighbor. He knows everyone in our neighborhood, knows them all by name, makes me look bad. Taking trash bins out, putting mine away. So, he's been awesome.
Again, I'll ask the hard question with an only short answer accepted. Will they be neighbors next year?
Yes. I would say yes. I think the Sabres are going to try to do everything they can for Alex Tuch to be here.
I can't wait till next week. We have so much to talk about when it comes to this stuff.
My answers are no. Yes. I don't know. I'll say this. I'll give you what I thought today. You know what? 8 times 9 is 72. 6 times 11 is 66. Like you could say to Alex Tuch right now, we can give you 9 over 8 years. That's $72 million right now. Or maybe you hope to get $11 million on a maximum 6-year deal on July 1, and that's 66. We're giving you more money, right? Mm-hmm. And 8 years of your life here with your family. Like that's the approach that I would have with Alex Tuch in that situation.
Do you remember the best car you ever rolled into an arena in?
Yes.
Cool. We'll hear about it after we hear from Peyton Krebs on his approach to the playoff game day entrance.
I don't know. I just wanted to, you know, maybe start a trend. If we have a good luck car to win a Stanley Cup, and if maybe I'd buy it if we won. But obviously, I'm not buying it now.
Vintage cars became a thing for Peyton Krebs.
Yeah, I had two cars that I used, actually three, I used to love to go to the rink with. I had a big Dually F450. I don't know why I got that, but it was awesome. It just cost me like $12 to go over the bridge in Philadelphia to go to the rink. I also had, I loved the vintage car, I had a very similar Z28. It was orange and black when I was in Philadelphia, and I would pull up to that, you know, a Camaro, and it was, you know, on the floor. It was four on the floor. It was awesome. I used to love that car. And then I had a 911 Turbo that I got, actually, the hot tub maintenance guy crashed in the back parking lot. He didn't see it, and he backed in right into the front bumper. The bumper was on the floor. Yes, here at KeyBank Center.
Unbelievable.
In the back parking lot. But those three were my favorites, obviously.
Yuri Kulik, I mean, his smile and the relief in that smile came through when he was able to tell the media that he is good to go and his playing career will resume in short order after missing almost the entirety of this year. I think, based on how the season started for the team, you almost forget that Yuri was there for the first month. There were an awful lot of challenges for the whole group, but nothing quite like what Yuri was dealing with blood clots, which has now been corrected through a procedure. Now, I'm not sure if Jason Zucker is fully bought into what happened to Yuri this past year.
Yeah, I mean, I've told him all year that he's been faking it, and that he guys play through injuries all the time. You know, he's just not one of those guys that can play through it, I guess. But, no, Yuri's, he's great. I love the kid. You know, he's been a great friend of mine and, somebody that I look forward to having back in the locker room. We missed him a lot this year.
Yeah.
He will be what on next year's team? First line or second line or third line center?
I say, well, he may be center. He may play the wing. I think he's a top six forward on this group. The scoring ability, the power play ability, I think he will get a great opportunity. And that relationship between Zucker and Kulik, I've witnessed this firsthand in the equipment room when Yuri asked, you know, equipment manager Dave Williams for a new stick one day. And Willie looked at him, and then he looked at Zucker, and Zucker says, "You're not on my line anymore. You don't get new sticks." Because he had told him, "You should get a new stick every game, but only if you're on my line. I don't care if you're on somebody's line." And the back and forth was awesome. I think it's great when veterans like Zucker kind of rub it in a little bit to the rookies. Robbery was like that, and even more, and that was great.
Yeah, and from Yuri's standpoint, he actually said that he's looking forward to being able to lose a little bit of weight after getting heavy, he said with a smile. But this is a great development right now for Yuri, and we wish him a tremendous offseason. So aside from Zucker poking fun at whether he was faking it or not throughout the year, I think there's always the ongoing jabs and we have seen it, heard it, nonstop, all year, directed towards Zach Benson.
Yes.
And it continued with Bo Byram and the T-shirt that he wore yesterday.
Yeah, this is a great T-shirt. When you look at it, Bo Byram's got a tight T-shirt that says white trash big time with a picture of Zach Benson on it. It is a running gag, but I'll say this. The last 2 months, we have seen more maturity, intellect out of Zach Benson than we did in the first 2 years with Buffalo. And I think the guys love to poke fun at Zach Benson because he's lovable and he's awesome. And he's a great teammate, but the way that he played and the way that he answered questions and tough questions at the podium, and man, did he grow right in front of
us.
Except
when he zoned out that time next to Greenway at the podium.
But even his response, so many people would have panicked there. And he goes, "I really didn't pay attention. You pick it up." Like, that's what we got to do live on TV sometimes. Just flip, right? And he did. And
you don't ever see that in my eyes?
What do we do? We're going to go to break. It's basically what he said.
You
didn't
hear my faux pas yesterday? Holy cow.
Well, we all have that. Yeah. I was live on TV last night when my phone crashed. And then they just said, "We're going to go to..."
Technical difficulties. They're like, much more...
Oh, I've had mental
easier to handle than have the mental lapses like I had. But the best part about Benson now, it's like being in a family of five older siblings, right? Like, that's what it feels like. Not that I would know this. I have one older sibling, but I can only imagine what it feels like to be in the room with like 25 people and you feel like you're down here, whether it's age-wise or otherwise, and people just pile on. Well, in comes another kid in Konstantinos, which gives Zach Benson this opportunity.
He's super confident. I mean, he's an elite player and, you know, just a great person too. So, you know, I loved having him around. He's hilarious and keeps the room light. And but at the same time, he's an elite player and super confident. So I think that allowed him to kind of flourish in the playoffs.
How does he make you laugh?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I guess I'd say he's not the smartest person, but no, I love him. He's an awesome dude.
Taking the words that have been bestowed upon him.
He's 20 years old.
No, it's just hilarious because everybody's called Benson not the smartest guy in the room.
But again, because Benson was young, and it's like, hey, I need to open a bank account. I do it or whatever. Like, there's a lot of those things that a 30-year-old is like, dude, I've done that like 50 times in my life. Like, what are you doing? And being on the road and, you know, stupid things like that. They all learn. They all become much more mature. Some, it takes a longer time, but at some point they'll get there.
Who do you think has a higher hockey IQ, Helenius or Benson?
I would think, let's see, on a scale from 1 to 100, they are both at 99.
I need to see more from Consta.
Oh, I think he's got just a, like... He and reads the plays.
There's a this, that, or the other here.
This, that, or the other?
Yeah.
Okay.
Noah.
Yeah, Austin, obviously. I think they all 99.
I know.
And
that's
then you know what? Yesterday, Jarmo Kekäläinen opening his press conference. I want to thank everybody, the players, the staff. He went to Michael Leone in Rochester right away for how he prepared the guys. Mm-hmm. I think there is a huge emphasis on smart hockey players. Nathan Page was that guy that had to battle and be a veteran in the AHL, played with really good hockey sense. Vinny Prospel, I sat next to Vinny in Philly and in New York. The guy has hockey sense like out of his ears, right? And I think that has been what they're trying to build in Rochester. And those guys coming up to Buffalo have shown it.
And as you might imagine, especially, you know, when you're still newer to the North American scene, you can gravitate towards countrymen, so it surprises no one that Konsta was living with Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen and maybe even borrowing the keys to the car.
How careful were you with Upi's car?
I was careful, but there's a little scratch, but that wasn't my fault.
Is your car all right?
No, the car's not all right, but... It's my old car, so, you know, it's fine. He just maybe some driving lessons this summer, and he'll be fine.
Did anyone borrow your vehicle?
Yeah, Max Afinaganov borrowed my 911 Turbo right here on the 190 downtown, and I could hear him right by the ballpark, right when you're up there by the Seneca Tower. I'm like, dude, what is he doing? And then Dmitry Kalinin was in the car with him. He got out. Dimas was the color of your sweatshirt. He wasn't white. He had gone into white, yellow, gray. Like, that's how fast Max was going when he borrowed the car.
How much longer did you keep it?
I had it quite a bit after that. Yeah. So, but it never really went that fast again.
Which Finn will have a bigger impact on next year's team, Luukkonen or Helenius?
I like to think that Helenius is going to have a big, big impact. These situation when a player gets called up during the season, gets his 9 games, and then gets to play a little bit in the playoffs, mm-hmm. that contract is going to be great for a few years because of the entry level aspect to Helenius' contract and the production. I want to say that the impact... Maybe measured with the contract, measured with the age, measured with what the Sabres are going to need and move forward into, that's going to be Helenius' spot.
Are you convinced that the Konsta and Noah and Jiri will all be on the team to start?
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Playing top nine, all three of them. Wow. I could see Noah starting maybe all three, maybe on different lines. Mm-hmm. Or actually, Let me rephrase that.
What about together?
I would think that Costa and Oslin could be on the third line together, and I think Jurie is a top six. But at some point, you may say, okay, how do we fix this? Mm-hmm. How do we fit this? Maybe there's one on each line. They have different roles. If Costa Hellenius continues to show like the offense and continues to grow in that role, then he could be elevated. He could take somebody else's spot. You can move around. You can have the depth. You have some decisions to make contract-wise. We talked about it yesterday. Benson contract, the Tuck contract, the Krebs, Malenstein, Kessel, Ring. Like, you've got $12 million in cap space. Mm-hmm. You're going to have to make some decisions here. So there could be big opportunities for all three of them starting game one next year.
Vegas won last night to open the Western Conference Final. Carolina is home to Montreal for the Eastern Conference Final. Darren Dreger always in the middle of it. Geography doesn't matter. It's not applicable to Darren. He covers the world for us hockey-wise, and he's next.
We're back with more of Sabres Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
GM, coach, players all addressed the media this week on the heels of the Game 7 loss to Montreal. If you missed any of it, Sabres.com is your place for that. Darren Dreger, our hockey insider from TSN, joins us as the conference finals are underway, at least will be fully underway with the Eastern Conference going tonight. Dregs, what was your takeaway, if anything? You're really good at reading between the lines and looking for stories moving forward from Jarmo Kekalainen's press conference yesterday.
Well, he was honest. I mean, clearly disappointed, as every member of the Buffalo Sabres organization is. I guess it was hard to read between the lines, Duffer, because I think back to the trade deadline and some of the work that Jarmo tried to do that was much higher level. Blockbuster type of stuff just to, build around the nucleus of the team and give that group a better fighting chance going into the playoffs. And, you don't sell the farm to make a trade. Trades don't happen all the time. But I'm wondering if some of the stuff like Robbie Thomas or Colton Parayko, if those are deals that Jarmo Kekalainen now revisits and reengages with those conversations as Buffalo is now in the offseason, or if he feels that the experience of getting through two rounds of the playoffs and then ultimately losing in game seven of the second round in overtime to the Montreal Canadiens is evidence enough that he doesn't have to be as bold and spend some of the assets that were on the table at or around the trade deadline. So not really reading between the lines, but trying to get a grasp, wondering whether or not Jarmo still has an appetite to bolster this roster like he did going into the deadline.
Now, let me ask you this or that, which one would you try to sign first? Zach Benson, who's on RFA, which you have until camp, start of the season, whatever, to get him into with a contract, or Alex Tuck, who's a UFA, so you basically have until July 1st. So which one would you want to sign first?
Well, I mean, I'm such a fan of Zach Benson. The guys that I work the hot zone on the panel with on TSN were tired of me talking about Zach Benson in our pregame preview hits on SportsCenter and then inside that hot zone postgame. Yeah. But you do have time on your side with Zach Benson, right? And there's no level of uncertainty that he is going to be a big part of the Sabres' future for a long, long time. So I guess in saying that, that's kind of my answer. Jarmo has a real good idea of what is expected from Alex Tuck's side to continue to engage in the possibility of an extension, a longer-term deal. This is life-changing. I'm thinking that's the way that Tuck and the Bartletts, who represent him, are processing as, they brace for the next round of communication with Jarmo. But the obvious is he's a pending unrestricted free agent. He loves his time in Buffalo, born and raised in the area, all of that. So I think Jarmo needs to find out, okay, is there any sort of wiggle room in this negotiation? Fellas, I can tell you, and I'm not surprised by this, like the season just ended. There will be a higher level of urgency to really drill down on what that number is, both in term and the annual average salary for the Sabres with Alex Tuck. They haven't done that yet. There's been no communication, since the end of the season, which wasn't that long ago. So I'm not being critical. I'm just telling you where we're at in the moment. But they need to find out, okay, what is the breakaway point for Alex Tuck? What's the bottom of the barrel? What is the price he's willing to take in term and money to stay in Buffalo? And I don't think we know that just yet.
Well, we do know, though, that if they want to retain both Benson and Tuck, that money is going to have to go out from the current roster. And as you would expect, I mean, it's not hard to look at the roster and see where that process might start to move out some of the money. I'm just curious, Darren, because we've talked about this a number of times, how thin the free agency field might be this year. How much more already are you starting to hear on the trade front, or does that never truly happen until the playoffs are done?
No, their general managers definitely are in communication right now. They're having conversations, and they're disclosing what their shopping list is. And, you know, they'd be specific to, okay, we're looking for a top six forward, preferably a center, you know, right shot defense. It's always the same sort of stuff for the teams that have the bigger holes that they want to be filled. And then, you know, that conversation can expand. But as I said, you know, talking about the Buffalo Sabres and the dealings that Jarmo Kekalainen had with Doug Armstrong and the St. Louis Blues. Again, those are conversations that you definitely revisit. No question about that. And before you get into any of the real heavy lifting on that trade front, you do also have to consider what the draft might look like. And I'm not talking about the drafting of players, but again, I'm going to revisit St. Louis. I was told earlier today, Armstrong doesn't want to leave the post as general manager without, you know, doing something of significance. And I know St. Louis collectively have a pretty big appetite wanting to move up, maybe even into the top one, well, not one, but 2-3 range, right? Wow. You know, is San Jose, is Mike Greer willing to trade that pick? So if there's a scenario there, what does that look like? So that sort of dialogue is continuing to happen. But, you know, again, let's just go back to Alex Tuck for a moment if we can, because, you know, it was easy to be critical of what he didn't do, and what he didn't do against Montreal was produce. And, you know, there are some, and there are so many experts and podcasters out there that just individually dig on players and speculate, okay, well, his price had to have dropped. Well, maybe it does in the eyes of Buffalo management. I don't know. I think that they would measure the body of the work and see the good things that Alex Tuck brings to the team and did in the regular season. What I know is this. You know, whatever that number is, the breaking point for Alex Tuck, he's going to get that on the open market. You just, you know, you're talking about having to uproot and to leave, and maybe you don't have the same opportunity to win if you're chasing top dollar that you have if you take a bit less, if you have to take a bit less to stay in Buffalo. But there is no doubt, regardless of what didn't happen for Alex Tuck against the Montreal Canadiens, that his market is very, very strong.
Well, that is why Drag's GMs and agent try not to talk numbers, because once the number is out there in the conversation, you can't take it back. It's out there. Go back to 2004 and 5 when we had the lockout and the players, we offered the league a 24% rollback. Well, that was to try to avoid having a cap. And then when the cap became on the table, the league is like, and we also have the 24% rollback. We're like, wait a second, that's coming off the table.
Yeah, wait a minute.
Hey, wait. No, it's on the table. It stays on the table. So I think that if Jarmo already talked about a number with Tuck, you can't walk it back after the Montreal series. Maybe you can, or maybe you say, we're not going to do it. But, I mean, it's very hard to walk it back. Another contract that Jarmo Kekalainen talked about, and he talked about his top four defensemen, Dahlin, Samuelson, Power, and Byram. Well, Byram, with a two-year deal, is eligible for an extension on July 1, being that this will be the last year of his contract. And he talked about, this is another guy we got to look at and lock him in. And Byram had a great first round against Boston, a great season this year. Yeah. Do you anticipate this being a priority, just like Benson? Or are we, like July 1, should we be talking about, well, let's pay attention to Byram as well?
Well, he is a priority in Buffalo for Jarmo Kekalainen. And I guess the reason I hesitate in being as firm as saying, you know, the expectation is that they get him signed to a longer term is, okay, what are the other areas of need? It's not just about addressing the contractual scenarios that you have to address within your own organization, But as good as Buffalo did, and they can't, I mean, disappointed, of course they're disappointed. You know, they came within a goal of advancing to the Eastern Conference Final. But you do have to look back at the year and say, man, we made great strides here. So what are we missing? What do we need? What is going to push us over the edge so the next time we face Montreal or we face Carolina next year, whatever that scenario looks like in the playoffs, we're deeper in the areas that we need to get deeper in? And if the answer is, all right, we need another center. We need something different on defense, whatever it is. You know, you do have to then explore, all right, well, what does a player like Bo Byram get us in return on the trade front? If you can appreciate and understand what his value is, what it's going to take to get him extended, which you're not going to know until July 1st or post, then you balance that with what the trade market looks like for Bo Byram. And both are going to be significant. And then at that point, when Jarmo is fully educated on what his needs are, how difficult they are to be filled, then he can make a decision on the future of Byram.
He really went out of his way to hammer home his top four, the Sabres' top four, and how he feels about it compared to the rest of the league.
He says, we can put it against anybody in the league.
Does that make you believe less that Byram would be, you know, shown or at least, you know, positioned like Darren's just talking about here? Because obviously you have to always be open to all possibilities depending on Darren has said as far as your needs. But could you see Byram not being a part of it?
No, and I think maybe the thinking here is let's focus on Tuck until July 1, and then let's focus on Benson after that, make some moves maybe at the draft to free up some cap space or through the offseason. And then once the season starts, let's focus on Byram then. I think that, you know, that may be more is the approach, but again, like Jarmo was very, very adamant about the whole defense, top four, best in the league, Byram, and everybody else, Power, Dahlin, Samuelson, are signed long-term. And the money is going to be great for them. So that's what I think.
Why wouldn't he be, though, Marty? Well, like, why wouldn't he be? When you look at that group defensively, now, you know, we can rewind to the early struggles, you know, early in the season. And there were whispers, and I don't know if that speculation got to your market or not, but there were whispers around the league around Owen Power and whether or not he might be a player in play if things don't turn around again. And then, you know, that seems ridiculous to say that out loud, but it sounds the same sort of layer of ridiculousness to throw Bo Byram's name into that equation based on what we've seen from that top four. So for me, that's a long shot, but when you're building a roster and you're trying to augment what you already have, I'm reminded of Billy Guerin saying time and time again, and here's a general manager in Minnesota who knows how to make a splash. He's done it a number of times now. You know, in order to get talent, you have to give up talent. The deal has to be fair for both sides, and that's when you know you've made a good deal, right? Yeah. You know, Vancouver got a boatload for Quinn Hughes. Well, I mean, Quinn Hughes is a superstar for the Minnesota Wild with questions around his future. But if a deal like that is presented for Jarmo Kekalainen, he does have the resources to make a splash if he feels they need to.
Now, Jarmo also talked about the three goalie situation, and they endorse it. And he actually said he talked to at the NHL GM's meeting about, you know, your emergency backup goalie next year has to be somebody that travels with the team, that is around the team. It's not one just on the home games that can be used for both teams. But there's rules. Can't have played pro, so you're like, okay, you're limiting yourself with maybe the ability. So carrying three is probably the best way to have always somebody that is a pro goalie, healthy, can practice, can play whenever you need to. From your conversation with other GMs, that's one out of 32. Do you feel like the other 31 agree with Jarmo or think that carrying three is a good thing? Because the Sabres were definitely, in my opinion, the exception to the rule.
Well, no, Carolina. Most of the year, Seattle had three a lot.
I'm just saying, like out of 32, there's probably 25 teams that don't think that and seven that think yes.
Right, but they've never been forced into this new world of e-bug, right?
Exactly.
And I thought it was really eye-opening and actually pretty high-level stuff from Jarmo yesterday on this. Yeah. And it got me thinking that, in fact, everybody, players and league moving forward, should consider just widening the roster limit to 24 if you're a team that wants to carry three goalies. Because what professional sports wants to have a non-professional athlete come in and decide a game when you're in a playoff race? It makes no sense.
Yeah. No, it's worst case scenario, no question about that. And this whole e-bug thing, and I was actually a bit surprised at how transparent Jarmo was of the whole process, because not many general managers want to talk about it, mostly because a lot of them don't like it. They don't like it. And there are still some questions. Like, I don't know, did Jarmo say how much can these guys actually get paid? You know, there's so many different restrictions. Is everyone going to fall in line? You know, is there a maximum? What does that look like? You know, is there a minimum? What does that look like?
Mm-hmm.
You know, all of these things. The goaltending, you know, carousel for me is going to be an interesting one this summer. And, you know, you look at all the teams with questions in goal, and those are, some of them are negative, but some of them are positive. I would say that Buffalo's goaltending questions are positive. They're positive. I think that Buffalo is dealing from a position of strength. I might say the same thing the Toronto Maple Leafs. You know, there are some who aren't as convinced as I am. But you look at Edmonton again as a team that has had all kinds of issues trying to solidify that position. So if you play the what if game, you know, if you're a team that's in need of, again, something unique or different, or you got to sweeten an opportunity or any of that, do you have that conversation if you're Jarmo about one of your goaltenders? Mm-hmm. Because, you know, you have to be able to at least go with the one in the 1A, which I think Buffalo has done effectively. We're watching it with the Colorado Avalanche, obviously. And we've seen it at varying points of the year with other clubs as well. So I think teams are becoming less and less worried about having a legit number one. As long as they've got two that could play the position, I think most clubs can live with that.
Or three, like Montreal has had at times this year, and Carolina, who are both now in the Eastern Conference Finals. Great. Yep. It's a great topic moving forward. Darren, thanks so much for today.
Okay, guys, thank you.
Darren Dreger, our hockey insider from TSN, will wrap up the week for Sabres Live right after this.
Get back with more of Sabres Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Well, you knew I couldn't go a month without talking about the shootout, so we have highlights from yesterday at the Worlds because Team USA needed a shootout win over Germany.
Yeah, they were 1-2 going against Germany, and they needed a win because they were in jeopardy of maybe not advancing, right? So, yeah.
No one was in jeopardy of anything. Everybody makes it. It's ridiculous.
Kind of, but
wake me in July when this is over.
Canada just won in overtime, by the way, a 6-5 win against Norway. So, yeah, Team USA, coached by Don Granato. They just got Matthew Tkachuk in. He missed the first three games, just got in to Switzerland and played yesterday. So maybe that woke up Team USA. But now they're 2-2 going into the rest of the tournament.
Yeah, they were down in regulation, got a late goal from Novak. They were down in the shootout, got a goal from Coronado, and then the winner from Leonard. So they are in a good place. Konsta Helenius debuts tomorrow, presumably for Finland. They don't need him, quite frankly. They're 4-0 and crushing everybody. But yeah, it's interesting, and obviously the more teams, you know, end their seasons here, more players get added, and obviously even though Canada had a tight win today, they have a stacked roster. Oh, Dazzled and Disturbed, real quick. Let's get into this.
Dazzled and Disturbed.
Would you employ these Bush's baked beans, especially the rocket pop flavor, at your barbecue this weekend?
No. The only one that sounds mildly tasty is the apple pie, because I love a sweet on my beans, like a maple syrup or whatever. Rocket pop, no chance. Dill pickle.
You're not a pickle guy?
No, I'm not a pickle guy. So I'm going to just take my beans the way they are usually. How about you?
I'll take your word for it. I'd probably try the dill just for the heck of it. But
I like a good rocket pop.
I can almost guarantee you that I wouldn't like it.
What'd you think of the game last night? Quickly, we have 15 seconds.
Meh. I mean, I figured Vegas would win, and they did.
Tortorella, the way he coached, block shots, 23. That was the way it was.
Well, yeah, the team with more blocks tends to win more often than not here. We just saw that in the Sabres-Habs series. Enjoy the weekend, folks. We're off for a little bit. See you soon.